Hello, and welcome back to the Special Ed Strategist. I am your host, Wendy Taylor, educational therapist, IEP coach, and I'm so glad you are here. If you've ever sat at the kitchen table late at night, worrying about your kiddo's challenges at home, meltdowns over homework, school avoidance, or feeling like something just isn't clicking, you are not alone, and today's episode is for you. I'm joined by Dr. Rebecca Fritsch, a licensed clinical psychologist who specializes in supporting children with anxiety, ADHD, learning differences, and emotional regulation challenges. Rebecca partners with families and schools to bridge that gap between what's happening at home and what's happening in the classroom. Together, we're going to unpack how to turn those parent concerns into actionable IEP goals and support at school, so you can walk into that next meeting feeling empowered and prepared. We're going to explore how to document what you see at home, how to collaborate with the school, and practice strategies for translating worries into measurable goals. Most importantly, we're going to give you those tools to start using this week. So let's dive in. Welcome, Dr. Fritsch. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Yes, absolutely. So before we get started, a couple of questions that really are not, well, one, I'm going to have you introduce and tell a little bit about who you are and how that aligns with the special ed strategist. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to ask you a follow-up question before we dive into today's question. So go ahead and introduce yourself or anything that I didn't say in our intro.
Sure. Yeah. So as you said, I'm Dr. Rebecca Fritsch. My background is actually in school psychology. And so I did my training in schools. I did my internship in schools. And I started my career as a school psychologist in Loudoun County Public Schools. So I had a lot of experience there, really kind of understanding this process, being a part of it, and actually being on that team. I switched into private practice. And so that's primarily what I do now. But in addition to therapy and assessment, I also do consultation and advocacy for families who are looking to coordinate with schools. And I really try and do this in a collaborative way, using that perspective of having both the experience in the school and outside the school as a mental health professional.
Yeah. And you and I, we kind of align in a couple of ways. My actually first teaching gig was in Loudoun County Public Schools. Okay. So many moons ago. And then it is so important now that I'm not in a public school setting that I do a lot with my families is that collaboration of care, because oftentimes I've said this before that we're operating in silos. My son, middle son, has medical needs. He's a brain cancer survivor. And I realize then as a parent, not only as a professional, but as a parent, that it's really hard to kind of navigate this world and to have somebody collaborate with you and help bring in these different perspectives so that we can really fully support our kiddo is incredibly important. So I appreciate that that's an angle that you take and what you're doing as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that team perspective is so important.
Yeah, yes, yes, yes. So before we get started, I do like to ask our guests, what is one thing that's like little known about you, whether it's a hobby or a sport or an activity that you do that maybe not necessarily relates to what you do in your professional realm?
I actually like to call myself a hobby dabbler. And so I suppose that is my hobby where I like to get into different little things at different times. And sometimes I kind of circle back to stuff that I like. And so I've kind of done a lot of different things. Right now, it's probably crochet and embroidery is really what's kind of grabbing my interest currently. But I will say that reading is something that I kind of stick with throughout life. That's been the consistent one.
Awesome. And then are you right now on your nightstand? Is it something for pleasure? Is it something for work that you're reading?
Right now for pleasure, just something light.
Light and easy. Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. That sometimes you just need like that bubble gum kind of just drift away. And I love it. So
exactly.
And to refocus, how can parents, so if we're thinking about as a parent and you're seeing your kiddo at home, and sometimes it doesn't always translate to the kiddo that school sees, and sometimes it does. So how can parents use observations from home to inform the school team, build those IEP goals in a way that can really highlight both the kiddo's strengths and emotional needs or communication needs, kind of just really thinking of that bell to bell that schools need for IEP development. So thinking of the communication, the cognitive, the emotional, the social, sensory, all of those. So how can parents really kind of take what they're seeing at home and put it in a way that schools are going to hear and see that so that they can start to align the sport accordingly?
Yeah, so I think one really great way to incorporate strengths is when you're noticing your kids doing really well at something or leaning on certain things at home or gravitating towards certain things, being able to use those strengths as a tool for how do we then support this kid, right? So as an example, if you notice that your kid is really great at making connections, right? They're always like, this thing relates back to this and this relates to this, right? How can you use that as a tool in the school? How can you make connections between what they are already learned or have already learned and what they still need to learn, what they still need to figure out. Maybe it's about making connections between their body sensations and their emotions in order to help them learn how to identify their anxiety and then regulate it, right? And so really kind of leaning into some of those things. And I think where you can observe and where you can track, right? Like what do you notice at home is working, right? How can you make notes about, I noticed that this leads to this, right? And even just being able to identify those simple correlations sometimes can be useful data and information for the school.
And so, with that observation and connection, how can our parents, what would you suggest? Are parents informing the school of this, or are they helping to then say, okay, this is because they may not have the understanding of like how to develop an IEP or I mean, IEP goals or services. So, how can they help kind of bridge that language of, okay, this is what I'm seeing, and then this is how this could connect within the classroom?
Yeah, I think it's about sometimes just bringing it to the table and saying, here's what I notice at home, right? Here's what works. Here's what I know about my kid. And I think at the end of the day, remembering that you are an expert in your kid, right? And just being able to say, come to the school and say, here's what I know about my kid, right? And then allowing them to kind of take that and use that for, well, where do we go with that, right? How do we use that? And you might not always know what the best strategy is. And that's why there are those professionals there who do know some of those things to really be able to support you.
Yeah, and that thread is so important, that communication piece, right? And really to open that dialogue and say, I'm ready here as a parent. This is who my kid is, and I'm going to lean on you as a professional to weave that into language, but this is really what I'm seeing. And I like that we're making this observable and trackable that you can say, at this time, this is what I'm seeing. And that way you're kind of being that data detective as well for the school, because we know that they like to see data and see how things are working. So to be able to bring that is really important.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when a kiddo struggles with whether it's anxiety or meltdown or school avoidance, how can parents kind of really describe that for the school?
So what I will tell you is that the schools, the biggest thing that they're looking for is what we call educational impact, right? And so their biggest concern is how are these behaviors getting in the way of learning? Right. And so, where parents are able to notice how it is impacting learning, that's going to be really useful. And it's going to feel less frustrating because the school's going to be on board with helping you if they can also see that educational impact. So, when you are noticing these issues, when you're seeing the anxiety or the meltdowns or the school avoidance, those things, being able to walk into the building, walk into those meetings and say, okay, here is how is it affecting my child's ability to access the education, complete work, participate effectively in class. Those are all things that's going to really kind of catch the school's attention in terms of, okay, there's something going on here that we need to address.
Right. And also thinking through like transitions and, if anxiety or if it's in the lunchroom or the recess as well, to try to kind of really see where the meltdowns, I obviously at home you're seeing that, but seeing if you can start to make a correlation for the team, like when this is happening, this is what's happening. And there's sometimes we don't even know, right? Like we just see the anxiety or we see a meltdown and we don't know what is kind of the coming from that or where it's coming from. And so helping the team have those conversations is incredibly important. And then where then do you see masking come in?
Yeah, and so the masking sometimes, and this is where it can get really tricky, right? And this is where we see the kids who, all day long they're holding it together, right? They're doing okay, they're making it work, and then they come home at the end of the day and it's total meltdown, right? And this is where it does get really tricky to kind of be able to help the school understand where there's a need at school, right? And really what you're trying to understand at that point is, okay, what are the things that are hard for the kid to manage all day long? Even if they're managing it kid okay, right? Or it seems from the outside, it seems from the school perspective that they're doing just fine. They're probably actually struggling, right? And so being able to figure out, okay, where are those struggles, right? A lot of times you can figure that out from your observations at home in terms of what tends to set your kid off at home, right? It's probably similar things at school, right? And so if you're noticing that every time you sit down to read, right, it's really challenging, that maybe that's something that at school they might not be throwing a fit about it, but they're really struggling through that reading time, right? Or you mentioned transitions, right? Are transitions always really difficult at home? And so recognizing where the problems are at home and where that behavior is coming out, that might be where the same struggle are happening at school. It's just not resulting in the same behaviors. But being able to then better take a look at, like, okay, is there something going on during the reading time? Is there something happening during transitions? And how can we start to support students in those times? And then see if it starts to reduce some of that tension when they do come home to that safe place where they feel like they can have that meltdown finally.
Yeah, and then should parents then focus on triggers or emotions or behaviors? Kind of what is the best or all to kind of try to figure out for the school?
Yeah, and that's tricky because I think sometimes some of those things are really easy to identify and some are not. And so I think to start sometimes with what's identifiable, right? What do you see? And that's usually the behaviors. Now, some kids are really in touch with their emotions and they're able to describe that, or they're able to tell you about what's going on. And that's wonderful, and where you can open up conversation or allow your kids to share their experiences. That's really great, right? And you can get a lot of information from their emotion and the way they can talk about their emotional experience. I think behaviors are the easiest thing to start with because that's the most obvious one, right? And when you're seeing those behaviors at home, being able to say, okay, where might this be coming from? Where do we, and then working backwards to triggers from there, right? I think that's kind of the easiest way to look at it because that's the way that it's most obvious. But again, being able to even just open up and provide open space for conversation with your kids and giving them room to share their experience and talk about what's going on. And they might not be able to label it exactly, right? To be able to say, okay, I was feeling anxious in this moment, but you might be able to start to hear and understand as they're telling you about their day, right? What does start to come up? What kind of patterns do you notice in the things that they're telling you about? What are they telling you that is maybe indicating an emotion that they're not quite aware of, right? I always get a tummy ache when I go to lunch, but they're not able to say, well, I'm anxious about not being able to find a friend to sit with, right?
What language helps teams kind of understand the impacts on learning that you have seen, of sitting as both as a member of on the public side of being in schools and now in the private?
So a lot of times participation is a word that comes to mind, right? How does a student participate? And so I think that's a really good one, and it's really helpful in understanding because, again, you're trying to look for that educational impact. And sometimes when there's not those direct behaviors, when you're talking about these situations where maybe there is some masking going on or the kid is holding it together okay, what tends to happen in those situations is if a kid is super anxious, they're not going to be participating all that well in the class because they're so anxious and they're so caught up in that emotion that even though they're not outwardly showing that anxiety, it probably is impacting their ability to actually listen, take in the information, respond appropriately, all of those things, right? And so I think that's a really good word to start and be able to think about, okay, how do some of these things impact participation? Are they able to focus? Are they able to pay attention? Are they able to complete work? Are they able to work in groups? Are they able to answer questions when they're called on, right? All of those things are signs that we're looking for. And being able to identify some of those specific kind of classroom behaviors, so to speak, and anything that you see at home that you feel like relates to a classroom behavior, right? And that might even look like, okay, what happens when you ask your kid to sit down at the table with you to do homework, right? Is there avoidance? Is there procrastination? Is there difficulty putting thoughts into words? Any of those things.
Yeah, and I always help my parents with kind of using just what you said in a format of like when blank happens, my child blank, which affects blank. And that way it's you don't have to write a novel, you just kind of plug and play of, when I ask my child to come to the table, this is how they respond, which affects this. And that way it kind of is really starting to set up that thread for support from the school to kind of do that little calculation for school and for support for that. Are there any home-based strategies that are small that parents can then kind of bring to the team that would then be more actionable? Meaning, like, how can parents kind of test some strategies at home before maybe they suggest them? Have you seen like anything like that?
Yeah, and I think again, this is where like, you know your kid and you're the expert in your kid. And so, yeah, I mean, you can try some different strategies or some different, what happens if you change the environment, for example, right? That's a common one. And so, does your kid work better with you sitting right next to them? Does your kid work better if you give them some space, right? So you can do some of that little experimenting around, okay, this is something that I notice is hard, right? Let's take all the factors in this situation, right? Sitting down and doing homework is challenging. And what happens if I start to play with that or change all the factors involved in that? Does it make a difference if I do it at a different time? Does it make a difference if I do just 10 minutes at a time and then we take a break? Does it make a difference if we start with math versus science homework, right? And so being able to make some of those small adjustments or play around or again, ask your kid for input. What do you want to start with, right? Here are the things that need to get done tonight. Do you want to start with this one, right? And kind of playing around with some of those things and then being able to pay attention to what happens when you make those adjustments. Right? Where do you see improvements? Do you try all these things and nothing changes? And then being able to take that to the school, say, we've noticed at home, right, that it's really helpful when, we give our kiddo some space to do the homework and then we just come in at the end and do a quick check or a review with them, right? Or it works a lot better if he knows he's going to get a break after 10 minutes of working, right? And, we do a little wiggle break and then get right back into it. And being able to kind of bring that really concrete data back to the school, right? The school wants data. That's the biggest thing. And so you can come in and you can have a lot of feelings and emotions about what's going on and say, this is so frustrating, all this, right? And they can hear that and they can be really empathetic to it, but it also isn't really going to inform the goals.
To switch a little bit, I talk a lot about parent input statements and helping parents develop a parent input statement and really thinking, present 3 months from now, 6 months, a year, 4 years, 5 years, however that may be, kind of forward thinking to really make sure that their voice is heard. And as you said, kind of a way to do it outside of all the emotions that may come to surface during an IEP meeting. So how can parents, on your thoughts, draft input statements that can balance that emotional context that really that they're seeing in their student, whether it's that anxiety or the refusal or, whatever those emotional contexts are, with those clear kind of objective information in a statement that really removes that overwhelm?
Yeah, my recommendation would be give yourself time to write a few drafts, right? And so in your first draft, when you're writing this statement, put it all down, right? Like be emotional, put everything in there, the frustrations, the concerns, if you need a few swear words, right? Whatever you got to put in that first draft. But start there just to give yourself a chance to get it all out of your system. And then go back through and start to edit down, okay, what is the important valuable information in here, right? Why do I feel like I want to say that I'm frustrated, right? Is it that you don't feel supported by the school or that there's not progress being made? Right? And how can you shift that into, okay, what's the point of this, right? Where is my feeling coming from? In the same way that we're trying to figure this out for our kids, right? Why am I feeling this way? And how do we get that? I think the other really useful thing is knowing what your goals are. What is the goal and what are you working towards? What is it that you want your kid to be able to do? And I think when you use those goals as kind of the guide, it's really helpful because it keeps you focused in saying, okay, this is where I want to get, right? How does any of this information that I have show that either we're not getting there or what I think might help us to get there?
And that's always helpful, and that processing piece and really organizing that information for parents and saying, all right, where are my priorities for this IEP cycle or for this couple of months or what, and but ultimately celebrating the strengths. Like, this is really what I've seen as growth for my student. This is really what they're excelling at, and making that more of a neuro-affirming lens of just like, okay, this is what we can really celebrate. And then how can we, which is so important, because then we can say, how can we weave in these strengths into our services or accommodations or goals? And then listing the concerns, but in a prioritizing way, right? Because if we list 20,000 concerns, How do we then come together collectively to identify where the biggest need is and how to really kind of hone in and strengthen our IEPs because of that? And then including, this is what I need from the school. So it's all really kind of laid out in this map format so that we can have that in the conversation. And I like how you said, just like put it all out there, throw those curse words in, and then we can delete as needed as we go down.
Yeah, absolutely. And don't forget the delete part,
Don't
but
forget to delete. That's right.
yes.
When you have like a concern that's really that can feel broad, like my kiddo shuts down at homework, how can parents work with the team to kind of refine that into something that's more measurable or realistic to really support the student?
Yeah, and I think this goes back again to what's the goal, right? My kid really shuts down at homework. What do you want them to do instead, right? And what does that shutdown even look like, right? And that's something that I see a lot too, where parents say, okay, my kid shuts down, right? That can look like a lot of different things. Does it mean that they hide in their room and they won't come out at all? Does it mean that they sit at the table and they just stare blankly at the page for an hour, right? Does it mean that they cry and they scream and they fight you, right? What does that even look like? And so starting sometimes with even being more specific in your language and describing the problem as best you can specifically, right? When we talked about that, like when this happens, right? And so, when you ask your kid to come do homework, these are the behaviors that occur, right? And so starting with a little bit of that definition, but then also saying, what do I want to happen, right? What do I want it to look like? When I say, hey, it's time to do your homework, do I want my kid to come sit down and do it and get it all done right away, right? What does that look like? Is it just that I want them to come do it without crying, right? And, I'm just trying to get them to that point. And so I think being able to say, here's what happens now, here's what I would like to happen instead.
And using that phrase, like, what does it look like? I do that a lot. And it's so helpful, right? If we think about our kiddo, like, we want them to go clean their room. Well, what does a clean room look like? Right. So then, really kind of breaking that down. My kid's not washing their hair. Well, what does that look like to them? And really having sometimes it's a visual, sometimes it's like a little video of how to do it. So, but kind of in that same vein of what does that meltdown look like and what do we want it to look like, or what is the expectation of when I'm done? As a teacher, sometimes it's like, this is what it looks like when you're done and you have all it mapped out for them. And so the students are like, okay, wait, nope, I'm not done. Mine doesn't look like that. And so that's really important to have those specific observable behaviors so that then, in turn, kind of bringing it all back, that we're going to hopefully reduce having goals that are too general for our student. And because if they're too general, then if an IEP goal is too general, then it becomes difficult to track and know that they've met a goal. Have you seen anything like that in your practice and your experience in terms of, we've all seen IEP goals too general, but then how do you recommend a parent or a team refine that to become more achievable and that we know when they're done with that goal, so to say?
Yeah, and this is something I work with parents a lot on, right? And in this school consultation that I do, right? A lot of times that is the issue. These goals are either too broad or they're goals that are, typical goals for a kid who falls in this eligibility category, right? And it's kind of like, all right, these are the standard goals for a kid with ADHD. And, we know that with so many of these concerns, there really is a spectrum and every kid has different specific needs, right? And so being able to get to and really use the data in the testing and the report to look back at like, what are those strengths and weaknesses, right? Let's pinpoint the specific weaknesses. Let's not waste time on the stuff that they can do okay, right? And let's focus in on where are the weaknesses so that we can really target those goals around those specific weaknesses. And then again, the other piece that I see a lot too is, and again, sometimes with these broad goals, it feels like there's no progress. right? Because it is such a broad goal. It encompasses so many different behaviors that it's really hard to be able to say, like, yes, we did it, right? And so being able to give these more specific goals allows you to then say, okay, we mastered that. That's awesome. Let's move on to the next thing. And so also being able to kind of weed out these goals that are no longer appropriate because the kid has done better, right? Has made progress. And that's what we really hope to see when we're writing these IEP goals, is that they're actually going to master them and then be able to maybe move on to the next thing. And so, again, really being, and I feel like I keep saying the same thing, right? Being descriptive is such a helpful tool in all of this, right? Being really descriptive in what are the strengths and weaknesses, being really descriptive in the behaviors really helps to refine those goals to get to the heart of, like, what is really the problem and how do we fix it?
How can parents advocate for their child's needs while still building that positive, collaborative relationship with a school team? It's such a balance that really is there and a struggle that is there because oftentimes, a lot of times, we're coming from this place of fear and love as a parent, and you're coming into a meeting. So, how can we start to, what advice do you have for parents to kind of balance that, to have that positive collaborative relationship while still being able to have a voice and advocate of this is going really great, but this is not going well?
Yeah, a few things. One that I mentioned already is going in with a goal. What do I want to see from my kid? What am I not seeing right now? And I think sometimes the hard part is you might have a different thought about how we get there, but I think if you go in with a goal in mind and you stay open to different suggestions and possibilities, it allows everybody to be on the same page because a lot of times the school wants to help your kid too, right? And they probably want to see them go to the reach those same goals. And especially if you walk in with a specific goal in mind, it's a lot easier for everybody to get on the same page and say, okay, that's where we're getting towards, right? And how do then we work together to get there. And if you can be a little bit open and flexible around, okay, maybe it's not the way that I'm thinking right now, but these people are also trying to get there. And so, as long as we're all working towards that, I can be okay with it. I think that's a great starting point. I also think it's really helpful to know what the school's responsibilities are here, right? And I mentioned this idea of educational impact and what the school can do. And there does come a point sometimes where it's not really the school's responsibility to fix everything or to handle everything or to put an IEP goal in place for things that really are not a problem at school, right? And there are sometimes things that can be a problem outside of school that are impacting maybe the way that a student feels or responds to different things in their home environment, but at school is not really impacting their ability to access the education, participate, all of those things, right? And so even sometimes understanding kind of where you reach that limit can be helpful because I know a lot of the conflict that happens sometimes between schools and parents is when they feel like, well, I see this problem and I want to help my kid, and they're expecting the school to do it, and the school is at that limit of we can't help, right? And so sometimes also knowing when you might have to go somewhere else to get that help and that support, and knowing that that can't be something that the school is going to provide, but they can provide help in other ways.
So, what is a tone or language that you've encouraged parents to use to help kind of signal a partnership?
Yeah, I think the first thing is to adjust your mindset going in and remembering that everybody here is on the same team, right? You're on the same team and everybody's working towards what's best for the kid. And I think having that mindset at the beginning is helpful. I think in terms of how to have those conversations, what tone or language to use, to be firm but curious. Right. And so being willing to approach this in a problem-solving way, and that you're going into this and you're bringing your data, right? And you're bringing your concerns and you're saying, here's what I see as the problem. Here are maybe some ways that I see to fix it. Or sometimes you're walking in saying, I see this problem and I have no idea how to fix it, right? Like, can you help me? And I think to go into it and say, we're here to problem solve, right? They're going to provide a perfect solution necessarily right away and say, okay, we do this and it's fixed, right? But everybody's kind of coming into it and being open to different solutions, right? In any kind of problem solving scenario, you want to be open to different ideas. And so going in and saying, here's my goal. This is what I want to get to, and being willing to work with the team then on, if they have some suggestions, and if you have a reason why you feel like that's not a good suggestion, you've seen things at home, right? Or said, we've tried that at home and it hasn't worked, or I know my kid and they're not going to respond well to that, right? being willing to share that data and that information. And then, is there something else we can do, right? And staying open to the process.
To shift a little bit on that, so as our kiddos and students grow older, how can parents, how do you help guide parents to involve them in ways that are going to shape the IEP goals or shape the classroom or school experience that's going to help foster independence and self-advocacy?
Yeah, and I think it starts with a little bit of self-evaluation too, right? And for kids to be able to reflect on what are my own strengths and weaknesses? What do I feel like I do well? What do I feel like I need help with? Or even to figure out what they respond well to, especially when I talk with kids in middle school and high school. There's so many accommodations that they have access to, and some of them are like, I never used that, or I didn't even know I had access to that, right? Because it's not something that feels very relevant or useful to them, right? And so, I have parents who are sometimes fighting for extra time on tests, and the kids like, I've never once used that. I don't need it. And so even just being open to like, even going through or taking the IEP and saying like, here are some of the goals, or here are some of the accommodations that, are meant to help you, right? And being able to ask them like, what does help you? What do you feel like you use most often? And what do you hate, right? Do you hate that, like, that one of the things is that there's supposed to be a teacher checking in with you every 5 minutes to make sure you're on task, and you hate that they come around every 5 minutes, right? And, being able to have that conversation with them and give them a chance to reflect on what's working or not working for them. When the school does invite your child to be a part of that meeting, schools will do that at various times, but really encouraging your kid to come participate, right? And telling them like, I think it'd be great for you to come and give your input, right? Because this is about you and about your learning. And then again, back to that goals question, what are your kids' goals? Even just being able to ask them, what are your goals? What do you want to get out of school? What would be helpful for you, right? And giving them a chance to kind of openly share their own perspective.
And then, how can parents help prepare their child to really express these needs in a meeting instead of just like, oh, hey, you're showing up next Tuesday? I think some of our friends, some of our kiddos need that kind of scaffolding of support. Any suggestions for that?
Yeah, so I think sometimes if you have those conversations with them ahead of time, right? What I was just talking about around, asking what works, what doesn't work, what they feel like they need, and talking through that with them, right? And then saying, that's exactly what I think you should say when we sit down at this meeting, right? Speak up, share that part of it, right? And then they may need some of that prompting in the meeting as well, right? And so again, sometimes teams are better at doing this than others. Some teams will do that for you and invite the student to kind of give their input. Some just kind of have the conversation while the kid sits there, right? And if that's the kind of environment to be able to say like, let's ask the expert here, right? Bobby, what do you think, right? Bob, what do you think is going to help you most? What's been most beneficial to you, right? And maybe giving some of that prompting in the meeting for them to speak up, or if they're really excited about it and you have a kid who wants to participate but like gets nervous about speaking up, like maybe you put down some notes, right? And you give them an opportunity to kind of write some things down so that they feel like they have it organized and they can say what they want to say, right? And so knowing your kid and working from kind of their starting point, right? Of like, how much do they want to share? How organized do they need to be? Are there ways that you can kind of help them to prepare how they want to?
What is the best way for parents to really kind of ensure these strategies and supports become consistent, right, across home and school, community? How can we kind of really thread that through, or what can parents do?
Yeah, I think communication is so important, right? And so being able to communicate after these meetings and check in with teachers, check in with your team, make sure you sign all the releases, and remembering all the people who are a part of your kids' team, right? And so parents, teachers, and school staff, but also mental health professionals, right? Really getting everybody on the same page around like, here are the strategies we're using, right? And so if there are strategies that have seen were working at home, being able to take that to the IEP team, they kind of put that into the IEP and say, here's how we're going to use that, continuing to use that at home, looping in your kid's therapist or anybody else who's working with them to say, here's a strategy that's really working for us, right? And so communication is the biggest thing, right? Making sure that everybody knows what's going on, how it's working, right? being able to open that line of communication between parents and case managers even to say, hey, you know, this is actually working really well, or, you know, we've noticed the last week or so this strategy that had been working really well is starting to not work so well anymore, right? Are you guys still reinforcing it at home? What does that look like, right? And you might say, we've seen the same thing, right? Sometimes kids are need the novelty of new things all the time, right? And so a strategy works for a little while and then it gets boring and they stop responding well to it, right? And maybe that's what you're seeing across all settings. Maybe it stopped working at school, but it's still working at home. And then, okay, what do we do about that, right? And so really just being willing to have that open communication when you're seeing changes in either successes or setbacks at home and some of those strategies, being able to share those and asking for the same from the school.
In your experience, what has been some great ways to bridge that communication, not only between home and school, but homeschool and other professionals, when we have a lot of folks that are supporting a student that's on their team, whether again inside the school day or outside? Have you ever used any tools or technology that you're like, oh yeah, this is the money, this is the secret sauce?
I wish I had one of those. So far, I haven't encountered something that makes it super simple. But I think even having those like introductory conversations, making sure that you sign releases, right? Like that's a number one thing too, right? Just to allow that conversation to happen. And so, you know, and I've worked it from a few different perspectives on this, right? And so, you know, even sometimes being invited as a therapist, for example, being invited to a school team meeting can be really helpful. And now I kind of get a sense of, okay, who are the people who are working with this kid? I'm putting faces to names, right? Understanding who some of these people are. And then it makes it a little bit easier sometimes then for either the teachers at school or myself to be able to, like, down the road, like something happens and I think, hey, this is relevant to this other provider. Let me even just send a quick email, right? And so even having sometimes that initial connection, or I have parents who will send an email kind of in our work that just connects me with other providers, school team or occupational therapists or different people, right? And being able to kind of just send that out and say, okay, making sure that everybody knows each other, right? And it makes it a little bit easier then to facilitate some of that quick, like, something happened here. I think you should know about it. Let me just send you a quick note.
What is your advice if a school says, you know, we don't do that? Like, what steps can parents then take to really kind of still keep this conversation productive and focused on solutions?
Mm-hmm. So I think there's two ways to address that. One is to go back to, okay, well, this is the goal. I feel like that's the way to get to that goal. You're telling me you don't do that. Okay, what's a different way that you're going to get us to that goal, right? And so giving them an opportunity to show you, okay, well, we still got to get there somehow, right? What's your idea for how we get there? Sometimes legitimately, they just can't provide that. And, you know, again, there are limitations in the schools. Unfortunately, funding and time and resources, right, just means, and legal requirements sometimes just means that they can't. And if that's something that you're really invested in, how can you help get me connected with that resource in a different way, right? So if they're not able to provide it, can you connect me with somebody outside of school who can give us that service? So that's the other way to kind of address it. But I think, again, going back to like, okay, here's the goal. I feel like that's the best way to it. You're telling me you don't do that. I hear you. How else are we going to get there?
And then what are some simple kind of weekly practices that can help a parent feel calmer and clearer and just more confident as they are preparing for IEP meetings, whether that is the week before or throughout the year?
Yeah, you know, this is a tough one because I think in terms of what you can do regularly on a weekly basis, right? I think it's just to kind of try and keep some of the consistency, right? The things that are work that are you're using at school, using the same kind of language and tools at home, being consistent with that. I think the other thing though that's important for parents to remember is that, you know, so often that feeling I think of overwhelm and tension and all of this comes from trying so hard to help your kid and do all this stuff for them and support them and do all the right things, right? And it's okay sometimes just to say, okay, we have this plan in place. It's being put in place at the school. My kid is getting that help and I can step back and just be the parent for a little bit. And that means that I don't have to be the teacher and I don't have to be the case manager and I don't have to be the person who's implementing all these strategies. I can just be a parent who's there to support them, right? And so even sometimes to say, okay, I need to take a break from it, right? And let them have a break from it and let them just be a kid at home. I think sometimes that takes some of the frustration out for parents to be able to say, like, they're not so caught up in it all the time that they're feeling that frustration. And then it allows them to enter into those meetings in a little bit of a better headspace because they're not feeling overwhelmed and really emotional themselves, right? They don't feel all of that pressure to hold all of this or carry all of this for their kiddo.
Yeah, and such a gift to give to us as parents. Just
Yeah.
that permission that it's okay. Right? Which is
Yeah.
sometimes when you're overwhelmed by, we've just talked about like data and reports and this and that. But yeah, at the end of the day, it's your baby and you want them to feel the love of a parent. And it's okay to have that, to do that. That's exactly what you're supposed to be doing.
Exactly, yes.
And giving yourself some grace. Exactly.
Yes.
So, kind of as we wind down, what is something that I did not know enough to ask that I should have asked for our conversation today?
You know, I was thinking about this ahead of time, and we talked about it a little bit, but I think like how to include mental health professionals in this team as well, right? And I think sometimes one of the things to do and to let your to let you know anyone who's working with your kiddo outside of the school, right? Again, to connect them to the school team, to let them know about some of the things that are happening in the schools, and also asking about that, like what strengths and weaknesses do you see, right? And again, sometimes therapists get a little bit of a different perspective from a kid than a parent. And so even being able to say, like, what do you think might be helpful, right? And kind of bringing some of these other team members, sometimes even, you know, sports coaches or physical therapists, right? These other different people who are working with your kid might have some good ideas as well, right? And so, you know, you don't have to be the only one collecting data or figuring this all out, right? You have a whole team of people who are ready and willing to support your kid and being able to use them too as a tool to inform those strengths and weaknesses or really be able to kind of help you with some ideas for strategies or things that may work.
Yeah, and that's coming from a different lens, right? So just even if you need to send them a quick text or email, is like, what is one strength that we could celebrate? What is one challenge that we should focus on? And then, what is one question from your perspective and supporting my kid that you may have that I can then bring forward to the team? And
Absolutely.
yeah, and I think that's a way that we can really kind of help then prioritize what everybody is seeing. And I love that you brought that up. Absolutely. What is one tip that you could put on a billboard for a parent? What would it be and why?
Put down your phones.
My final question. Yeah. But I like that. Put down your phones. Yeah.
No, I just think it's so important to, you know, again, you see so much about parents being frustrated about screen time and all the, you know, all the negative effects. There's so much out there about, you know, trying to limit screen time for kids. They already got a lot now, like especially at school and doing so much on the computers. But parents forget that they're modeling that too, right? They're constantly on their devices. They're constantly doing that. Taking that time to just connect one-on-one with your kid without distractions is so helpful to your relationship. And you're going to be able to get a lot more information about strengths and weaknesses and what's going on at school and what's working for them. And they're going to share those things with you way more openly if they feel like they actually have your attention.
So it's interesting you just said that. I couldn't agree more. There was an article that just went out. Hugh and I are in the DC area about Hush Harbor is a new restaurant or bar that's opening up in Northeast DC, H Street. And basically when you come in, they give you like the Yonder pouches.
Oh,
And you
yeah.
slip them in there and you seal them. You still hold on to that pouch. And then, obviously, if there's an emergency, you can certainly access it. But the whole goal was to bring people together in a restaurant, like in a phone, hands-free kind of situation. And I thought, oh, that's really cool to kind of bring that back to, old school and just be present and have the conversations and look somebody, and just really kind of be in that moment is something so precious that sometimes we miss in our busy society.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, this has been such a pleasure, and I'm really
Yeah.
thankful to have you on and the insight coming from your world and how to help parents navigate this process with their kiddo. Where can people find you?
Yeah, so I'm at Child and Family Associates of Greater Washington in Falls Church. You can find more information about mine and my colleagues' services on our website, cfa-gw.com. And we provide therapy assessments. assessment and also this collaborative school consultation as well.
Well, perfect. Rebecca, thank you so much for your insight. I appreciate your time and thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.
I hope today's conversation with Dr. Rebecca Fritz left you feeling seen, supported, and empowered. Turning those concerns into actionable IEP goals and services doesn't have to feel overwhelming. You deserve to have a voice, and your insight as a parent are essentials. I want you to take 5 minutes to write down one strength, one specific challenge that you've noticed at home or the community. Bring those two notes into your next school conversation or IEP meeting. This simple practice can help shift the focus from frustration to solutions, and it's a powerful first step in advocating effectively for your child. If you found this episode helpful, please like, share, and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast. Your support helps us reach more families who need this information. And if you know another parent navigating the special education process, send this episode their way. We'll thank you later. Until next time, I'm Wendy Taylor, educational therapist, IEP coach, and I want you to remember, you are your kiddo's greatest advocate. Until next time, bye for now.